Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Shavuos Daf Mem Ches. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 10 lines from the top of Daf Mem Ches. The Gemara opens with a brief quote from the Mishnah. The Mishnah Daf Mem Hei Omid Aleph. The quote appears there, 14 lines from the top of the Omid. Before we begin the Gemara, we glance at the side where we have a nosei, a topic heading, which reads, Loma tzrichim shnei hamikri b'mishnah. Why do we need two very similar appearing cases in the Mishnah? One, chenvoni, a fruit vendor, and two, Vishuchani, a money changer. And we see in both cases a machlokas tanakama of Rabbi Yehuda im balabayas tzorech lishova. Given two respective circumstances, we see the tanakama saying that it is necessary for the customer to swear that he already paid whatever he was expected to pay, and Rabbi Yehuda disagreeing. In order to achieve maximum benefit from this piece of Gemara, it's highly recommended to go back to the Mishnah and just quickly go through the cases. We'll do that together now. The Mishnah on Daf Mem Hei Omen Aleph, 14 lines from the top. The first case involved a store owner, a fruit vegetable salesman. Omar lechenvoni, a customer says, "Tain li bedinor peros, give me a dinar's worth of peros." A dinar is a certain amount of money. So, if you prefer, give me a dollar's worth of fruits. Venosan lo, and the store owner delivered the fruits. He gave the fruits. In fact, there's no argument about that. That's a fact. He gave the fruits. Now, the controversy between customer and store owner. Omar lo. Ten li es hadinar. Store owner says, give me the money. Armalo, customer says, nasativ loch, I gave you the money. Unesato bonpoli, and you put it in a special wallet where you keep your cash. So the Tanakama says, yishova bal habayis. The customer has to swear that he gave the money. A case of swearing to exempt yourself, as we've seen in the past. If we just skip a little bit here, a couple lines, we meet Rabbi Yehuda, who says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer kol shaperos biyado. Let's focus on the case we read. The customer received the fruits. So yado al elyona, he has the upper hand. He does not need to swear. The next case in the Mishnah continues, Omar la shulchanik tenli bediner mos. Customer says to money changer, give me a dinar worth of mos. A dinar is, in this case, a larger coin than mos. Mos are smaller copper-type coins that are used for everyday expenditures. So he gives the larger coin to the venosanlo, means, and the customer gave the larger coin to the money changer. Omar lo, tenglies a dinar. I should say, let me read that again. Tain li bedinor mos and venosan lo. The money changer was requested to give a dinar worth of mos, venosan lo, and he gave the mos. He gave the copper coins. Omar lo, tain li es a dinar. So now the money changer says, give me the coin, the large coin. Omar lo, nasativ loch. Customer said, I gave it to you. Unasata bumpali, and you put it in your wallet. Yishova balabayas. Once again, you see the Tanakama saying that the home, the customer, the balabais has to swear. Notice in both cases, the customer received what he requested. In the first case, the customer had received the fruits, and in this case, the customer received his copper coins. The customer is claiming, in the first case, that he paid for the fruits, and in this case, he says he gave the large coin. The Tanakhama in both cases says, balabais has to swear. The Rabbi Yehuda opinion appears, just skipping another couple lines. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein derech shulchani litein isar, ad shi tol dinaro. Rabbi Yehuda says, the shulchani would not have delivered the small coins unless he already received the dinar. So from the fact that the customer is holding the small coins already, that's sure sign that he did, the customer already paid the dinar. In the first case we saw, Rabbi Yehuda saying that if the homeowner, if the customer received the fruits, so he has the upper hand. He doesn't need to swear. So you see consistency in both cases. The store owner or fruit salesman and money changer, Tanakhama, expecting the balabais, the customer, to swear. In both cases, after he received the goods he ordered. And Rav Yehuda, in both cases, saying that the balabais, the customer, need not swear. So now, the Gemara wants to know, why do I need these two cases? Couldn't I figure one from the other? The Gemara. Omar l'shulchani tengli v'chulei utzricha. I need both cases. And we have a long point marking. We often do this when you have a tzrichuso, where the Gemara points out the necessity of having the two examples in the Mishnah. The Gemara continues, the Iashmin and Hakamaisa, had we featured the first case, the fruit salesman and the machlokas between the Tanakhama, the first opinion, and Rebbe Yehuda, the Hach Koamri Rabbonon, it's in this case that the Rabbonon say that the customer has to swear that he paid the money for the fruits. Mishum deperi avidi demirkevi. The nature of fruits is that they have a relatively short shelf life. They rot. The kevon demirkevi, and since they rot, lo mashulei. People will not delay them, keep them for a long time. Meaning, the chances are great that the store owner unloaded the fruits quickly. In other words, he may have very well have given the fruits before he got the money. Oh, so the fact that the customer is holding on to the fruits is not a sure sign that he paid yet. Therefore, the Tanakhama says, customer has to swear that he paid, if that's what he's claiming. Avol mois de lo mirkevi. But in the case of coins that don't rot, certainly not in such a short amount of time as fruits. Amo modu lei the Rebbe Yehuda. Maybe the Rabbonin, the first opinion, would have agreed with Rebbe Yehuda in that case, in the money exchanger case, that there's no need for the balabais to swear. As Rebbe Yehuda said, if the balabais, if the customer is holding on to the requested coins, it's a sure sign that the money changer had already received his pay or had received the large coin. Why? Because the money changer is in no rush to unload the small coins requested. There's no rotting factor that he has to be afraid of. And as such, if he delivered the coins, it must be that he already received the large coin that was given in exchange. And no need for the balabais to swear. V'itmar b'ha, and had we featured the machlokis Tanakhama and Rebbe Yehuda regarding only with regard to the shulchani case, the money changing case, b'ha koma Rebbe Yehuda. Maybe only here Rebbe Yehuda would take the position that the balabais doesn't have to swear because of the known given behavior of money changers, that they never give over their requested small coins unless they previously received the large coin from the customer. And therefore, if the customer is holding the small coins, it's a sure sign that he already had paid the large coin. Avol b'hach, in the case of the chenvoni, of the fruit salesman, emo modu lehu l'rabbonan. There was room to think that maybe Rebbe Yehuda would concede to the Rabbanan to mechayev the balabayas to swear, because of what we explained earlier, that it's quite likely that the balabayas received the fruits immediately because of the rotting factor before even paying. Therefore, Tzricha, I need to tell you the case of the chenvoni as well to illustrate Rebbe Yehuda's opinion that there too the balabayas is exempt from swearing. Kishem shomru hapogemes ksubosa v'chulei v'chein hayisoymim lo yifru ela b'shvua. The Mishnah mentioned that in the case of pogemes ksuba, the woman who has a ksuba document to collect, but she admits that it's been partially paid, she cannot collect the balance unless she swears. Likewise, yesomim, orphans, cannot collect debts owed to their father unless they swear. The topic heading that you see on the side reads as follows. Mosai amrinon di yesomim shel amalveh, the heirs of a lender, yecholim lishova kedei ligvois mi yesomim shel aloveh. Under what circumstances do we say they are allowed, they have the option of swearing in order to collect money from the orphans of the borrower? We're saying under what circumstances they have that option, because under other circumstances they won't be able to collect, because they won't have even the option of swearing in order to collect. So there are two situations, and we've seen this before on Daf Mem Zayin, in fact, not long ago. Two possible situations. One, meis malve b'chayelove, a situation where the lender who had a shtar, but he died in the lifetime of the love, in the lifetime of the borrower. So in a situation like that, you would have the yesoimim confronting the lova himself. Of course, as things progress, the lova also dies. But there's another case, meis loive, where the borrower dies b'chayi malve. And that means that the malve, the lender, during his own lifetime, he was in a position where he would need to swear in order to collect from the heirs. We have a rule that a person does not collect from heirs unless he swears, even if he happens to have a document, a shtar, in his possession. The key question that comes up in this discussion is, Haim Odom Meirish Shvua Levonov. Do we allow for a situation where a man himself, in order to collect, would not have been able to collect a debt unless he swears, and when that man dies, having already been obligated to swear, will his heirs be able to likewise swear and collect that debt? It's almost as if we're saying that the father is bequeathing a swearing right to his children. We know that property is something that one inherits, one passes down from generation to generation. It's something that is of substance, it's physical, it's corporeal. What about passing down an oath? Now we turn to the Gemara. Miman. The Gemara asks, when the Mishnah says that Yesoimim likewise cannot collect other than through an oath, collect from whom? Ilemo mi love. If you're to suggest the Yesoimim are going to collect from the borrower himself, the Gemara says, and in order to do so, the Yesoimim, the heirs of the lender, would have to swear to collect from the borrower himself. Avu hon shalkil beloshua. Their father would have been able to collect from the lender without taking an oath. After all, he had a shtar. He had a document. If you have a document, you collect from the debtor without an oath. So the father, the malva, would have been able to collect without a shvua, without an oath. Ve'inu b'shvua, just because they're yisaimim, they need to take a shvua, they need to take an oath. That's not true. Hochi ka'omar. So the Gemara explains, thusly, we are to understand the Mishnah. When the Mishnah says v'chein ha'yesomim, it meant v'chein ha'yesomim min ha'yesomim. Heirs collecting from heirs, or orphans collecting from orphans. Orphans of the mavet are collecting from orphans of the lovet. Lo yifru ela b'shvua, they collect, but only if they take an oath. If the orphans of the malvah, the lender, swear that the debt is still outstanding. Rav Shmuel, Dami Trevayhu, Rav and Shmuel both say, Lo Shanu Ella. They qualify the Mishnah. They qualify the ability to collect with an oath is only Ela Shemes Malva B'chai Loive. Where the malva died during the lifetime of the loive. If that happened, so the malva himself did not need to take an oath. He had a real momon debt, a debt of money to collect. As soon as he died, that, we'll call that physical debt, we're talking about the chance of collecting cash, collecting money. Money is something that's inherited from one generation to the next. So he died at that point. The money that was in the reshus, we'll say, of the lova, was inherited. The money itself was inherited by his heirs. So now these heirs were in a position at a certain point to collect without having to take a shvua. It's just that the lova then died. At the point that the lova died, so his heirs come into the picture, and the malva heirs will now, for the first time, will now have to swear. So that's a first appearance of swearing is upon the children of the malva. There was no swearing on the part of the malve. Avol, meis loive b'chai malve. If the lova, the borrower, died during the lifetime of the lender, kvar nischayev malve livnei loive shvua. The malve himself became obligated at the point of the borrower's death to take a shvua. Namely, the malva, the lender himself, would have had to swear to the children of the lova. There is a rule, we mentioned it before, that ein ifroim nichsi yisoimim ela b'shvua. A person does not collect from orphans unless he first takes an oath. So here the malva himself would have had to take an oath. And now the malva dies, leaving heirs to collect from heirs. V'ein od amirishua levonov. A father does not bequeath unto his children shvua rights. So that if the only means of collection was through a shvua, then the malva dies, the ability to collect stops. It can't be passed down, because what you in effect would have to be doing is passing down a right to take a shvua. Shochua kamei de Reb Elazar. You're going to see the use of a diamond in this Gemara on the side. We indicate under the Mivneh, the structural note, these are Rabbonim Shehibiu Daitam Benoisenal. These are different rabbinic opinions that voice their opinion, express their opinion regarding this topic. So the teaching of Rav and Shmuel was sent to Rebbe Elazar. Shvua zu ma tiva. We can't really translate that, but Rashi says ma tiva lahafkia mamonam. The Shvua teaching of Rav and Shmuel has part of it the loss of money. Namely, in the case of Meis Loive b'chayim Malve, because of the Shvua factor that the Malve himself had to swear and now his children won't be able to swear, so that's called Hafkoas Mamon. No more collection. Losing collection rights. And Rebbe Elazar is perplexed about that. How could that be? Now, just because the father had to take his shvua, now the children won't be able to swear and collect. Sholach lehu, yorshin nishboyin, shvuas yorshin v'notlin. Rashi, yorshin nishboyin, you notice there's a little star we had written in the Dibor Maschil. Im ein yechoyim lishova oise shvua mamish, if the yorshim, the heirs, cannot take the same shvua that their father had taken, the father would have taken a shvua that I did not get paid. Okay, so the children cannot swear that very text. Rather, they would swear a different shvua. So if they can't swear the same text as their father, they would swear shvuas hayorshim. Yishavu shvuas hayorshim. Kigon shvua shelo. We swear that father did not leave any instructions that the debt has been paid. In other words, the debt is still outstanding for Notlin, and as a result, take the money, collect their debt. So you see, Rebbe Elazar clearly disagrees with Rav and Shmuel. We continue. Shalchu avimei Rebbe Ami, Omar kuli hai shalchi lo viazli. The same case, the same teaching was sent to Rebbe Ami, and it seems the issue was sent to him on repeated occasions. And he says, boy, you're sending the same issue to me so many times for my response, my clarification. If I had an explanation for this, would you think I wouldn't have sent it to you? Well, it seems at a certain point, he arrived at his desired conclusion. Ela Omar Rabbi Ami, Hoyo V'Osa Liyodo Nemo Bomilsa. Since this matter has been presented to us, so let us now say something. Two stages. Omad Bedin, Umes, if the Malve had produced a shtar, and then died. The Rashi says, "Omad b'din shahoitzi shtar ze al yasme loive." Once again, it's a case where the loive died in the lifetime of the malve. It's the case that Rav and Shmuel said there's no chance of collection. So Rabbi Ami says, if there was omad b'din, there was a court appearance where the malve, the lender, produced the bill of collection to the yisaimim, to the heirs of the borrower. The Omru Lo Bezdin Hishavavato, and Bezdin would have instructed him swear and collect. That's the case of Omad Bedin Umes, and then the Malve dies. Kvar Nischayev Malve Livne Loive Shvua. Well, at that point, then the Malve himself was required to swear. Now he dies. The Ein of the Meir Shvua Levonov. Then we say what we saw in the name of Rav and Shmuel, that the shvua is not something that's subject to inheritance. However, lo omad bedin umes, if that did not happen, where there was no court ruling on their father, on the father of on the malva himself, on the father of these heirs, there was no court ruling on him to swear and collect. Again, lo omad bedin umes. Then Yorshin Nishpoyin Shvuas, Yorshin V'Notlin. Then the Yorshim of the Malve are able to collect from the Yorshim of the Love. from this presentation of Rabbi Ami, it would seem that the creation of the Shavua was through the court ordering the Malve to swear and then collect. This gives rise to Rav Nachman's question. Maskif lo Rav Nachman. Otu beidino komachayvi leishvua. Is it the court that creates the shvua obligation? Me idno de shochiv loive ichayev le malve livne loive shvua. From the point that the loive dies, the malve becomes obligated to take the shvua. So making this distinction between Omad Bid versus Lo Omad Bidin is not something Rav Nachman agrees with. Elo Omar Rav Nachman. I Isa l'daravu Shmuel. Isa. If Rav and Shmuel are correct that Ein Oda Meiru Shmuel Abonov, then so be it. Whether Omad Bidin, whether Lo Omad Bidin, that would not make a difference. And either way, whenever you have a situation that the Malve would have had to swear in order to collect because the Lova died in the lifetime of the Malve, as soon as the Lova dies, the Malve himself will have to swear to collect from the Yisoymim of the Lova. So then, if that's the case, then the Yisoymim of the Malve won't be able to collect any further because of Ein Olam Mirishwa. If we don't hold from Rav and Shmuel, rather take the approach of Rebbe Lozar, that if the Malva died and the children can't take the same Shvua as their father, they take a different Shvua. So then, less so then, their collection restriction doesn't exist, and the Malva's children will be able to collect. That's Rav Nachman's statement. Now, what do we see from Rav Nachman's statement? Alma misafkale. It would then appear that Rav Nachman himself is in doubt how to rule. He's saying, if we hold like them, fine, and if not, not. It's not something that is clear to Rav Nachman. The Gemara asks, V'ha'omar Rav Yosef bar Minyumi, Ovad Rav Nachman uvdo yachloku. Is it not so that Rav Nachman took a clear stand? He made a ruling that in a case like that, where the Malva himself would have had to swear, and he died before the actual collection, so then the money will be split, the debt will be split between the Yasme Malva and the Yasme Loive. Now we look in the Rashi, Yachloku Gabi Shneim Chashudim. This ruling of Rav Nachman was in a different case. That was in a case where both parties, the Tovea and the Nitba, were suspect of lying under oath. Didamya Laha. In that case where you have Shneim Chashudim, these are cases we've learned already, we know that neither one can swear. So in this case as well, there's this point of similarity. She'ein echod mehem yochol lishova. The children cannot swear. There's no oath possible. Alma lesa leha de Ravu Shmuel. So from Rav Nachman saying that there is collection, then even though it's a situation where no oath is going to take place, so courtesy of Rashi, we see that Rav Nachman does not hold like Rav and Shmuel. It's just what's a little tricky in this Gemara is that the word yachloku that you see here, Rashi points out, is a reference to Rav Nachman's ruling in a different case. That's in the case of Shneim Chashudim. But what is common to that case in our case is a situation where an oath can't be taken. So what happens when an oath can't be taken? Payment is made. That is the indication that Rav Nachman does not hold in a definitive fashion. He does not hold like Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara continues and says there's no kasha here. L'dvorov de Rabbi Meir ko'omar v'lei lo svira lei. Rav Nachman's ruling of Yachloku is based on the teaching of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir had said on Daf Mem Zayin, he had said in a case where Shneim Chashudim Chozer Shvul Mukoima. And in that case of Choser Shvua L'Mekoyma, so he said what he did. However, V'lei Lo Svira Lei, Rav Nachman doesn't hold by that, and the psak that he gave of Yachloku is in accordance with Rabbi Yossi. Before we can go further, we have to go over the last couple lines in the Gemara in light of an alternative version, an alternative girsa that appears in the Gemara. We had seen that Rav Nachman expressed his, let's say, his doubts about Rav Ami's distinction. And Rav Nachman then said, "Im iso d'Rabbi Shmuel, iso im leso leso," indicating that Rav Nachman is in doubt about how to rule in this kind of situation. The Gemara upon that asked, "Why do you think that Rav Nachman is in doubt? Do we not see that he ruled in the case of Shneim Chashudim al Hashvua Yachloku?" And Shneim Chashudim al Hashvua is a situation where a Shvua cannot be taken, and Rav Nachman ruled Yachloku that the amount of money in dispute shall be divided. In other words, there is payment made, even though a Shvua can't be made. So it doesn't seem that Rav Nachman has any doubt. In fact, it would seem that Rav Nachman simply rules against Rav and Shmuel. So the alternative girsa that appears in our Gemara, and we're going to read from the third wide line of the Gemara in the middle, Li'oilo, it says, Lidvorov de Rebbe Ami Ka'omar. That is what you see on the side in the name of the Marshal. And that means that that which Rav Nachman just said, this is Rav Nachman's disagreement with Rav Ami. V'lei lo svirolei. Rav Nachman himself, when he ruled Yachloku, he was let's go over that last point again. Rav Nachman was expressing this seemingly doubtful element in light of Rav Ami's distinction. He didn't like Rav Ami's distinction, and therefore no distinction is to be made between either Almad Bedin or Lo Almad Bedin. If you hold like Rav and Shmuel, fine. If not, not. That whole approach was a reaction to Rav Ami. Now, that may have given us the impression that that Rav Nachman is in doubt, but that's not true. V'leilo svirolei, when Rav Nachman ruled Yachloku, and we had a situation that no Shvua could be made, that is because Rav Nachman was ruling like Rabbi Yossi in that sugya of Shneim Chashudim al Shvua, and Rabbi Yossi rules in a case like that, Yachloku. Now, the question that remains might be, do we superimpose superimpose the case of Shneim Chashudim to our case of a father who had to take a Shvua, and now the son has to take a Shvua, that there is a money payment, just like over there, that there was no Shvua that could be taken, and yet there was a money payment. So be it. It might very well be that Rav Nachman rules like that. The main point is that this expression of doubt on the part of Rav Nachman was simply his reaction to Rabbi Ami's distinction. Rav Nachman himself, as we are suggesting, has a very definitive position that when there is any, let's say, question about the ability to take an oath or not, that is not going to disturb the ability to collect. We continue in the Gemara with a new marking. You see a house shape, and on the side under the Mivne heading, this marking represents Kushyos al Rav Ushmuel di Amri Ein Odom Meiri Shvua Lebonov. We're going to raise questions on the basic teaching of Rav and Shmuel, who said Ein Odom Meiri Shvua Lebonov. Now the Gemara Mosiv Rav Hoshaya Mesa. This is a case involving a widow who died before collecting her ksuba. A woman who is an almona, so by definition, she's a widow. She would be collecting from Yorshim, from heirs that inherited her husband. So when a woman dies without having collected her ksuba, and she has, upon her death, she has her own heirs, Yorsheha mazkirin es ksubasa ad esrim v'chomei shanim. Without getting into the details, this is a sugyan maseches ksubos, but it says that her heirs are able to collect her ksuba for a period of 25 years. What do we see from over here? We see her heirs are collecting from heirs. How are they going to collect? They are going to have to take the shvuas yorshim. So that even though you have a case where the loive, meaning the husband in this case, he's the one that owed the woman money. So he's like a loive, died in the chay, in the lifetime of the malva, the woman. And the woman was chayev to have sworn to get her ksuba to his heirs, and then when she dies, her heirs are going to swear. So does that not show that heirs do swear to collect from heirs, even though the benefactor here, in this case the woman, she herself would have had to swear? The Gemara rejects this question. Hocha b'mayaskinon. The case here is shenish ba'a umesa. The almona herself had sworn, and then she died. If that be the case, it would seem to me, now Rashi doesn't elaborate on this, but it would seem to me that at the point that she swore, she then became she then is said to have received, it's as if she received the money. As if, I emphasize as if, not actually, but at that point, an actual mammon debt was owed to her, and that is something she could bequeath to her heirs. So it's not a function of being moirish a shvua to yorshim. Why? Because she took care of her shvua aspect of things. So she wasn't passing to her heirs a shvua. Toshma. We try again another question. Nosa rishona umesa. Man married a woman and she died. Nosa shnio mesu, and then that man married a second wife, and the husband then died. Shnio v'yorsheha kaidmin liyorshe rishona. This second woman has a right from the letter of the law to collect her ksuba. She is an almona, so she. And it says in this Mishnah, she, Vyorsha, and her heirs have first crack. They collect before the first set of heirs. Now, let us emphasize that this Shnia, the second wife, she was an almona, and she outlived her husband. In order for her to collect her ksuba, she herself would have had to swear. Then when she dies, her yorshim, her heirs, are going to be able to collect her ksuba. How? Well, they're going to have to swear. So what do we see? She, their mother, or their benefactor, the woman, would have had to swear, but she died. Her heirs are they're going to swear. So we have a situation of Adam Merishwa Liorsheha. That is a kasha on Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara responds, Hachinami shenishba umesa. Here too, this almona, before she died, she swore that she had not received her ksuba yet. And then she died, and her yorshim want to collect that money. So their swearing is not a function of their inheriting an oath from their benefactor, because that mother or that woman had already sworn. She had an actual debt of money coming to her. Ta Shma. This is again a partial source, and there's a background to this particular source. And Rashi gives us the background. If we look at the Rashi together, Toshma v'Yorshav Mashbiyin Oisav Yasirshel Reisha the Masis Makosev Beksubas. The early part of this, the beginning part of this Tanaic source is found in Maseches Ksubas, and it says there Kosav Lo Neder Shvu Ein Li Olayech Ve'Al Yorshayech. A man writes a disclaimer to his wife that I will not impose any neder, any vows or oaths upon you or upon your heirs. Hu eino yochol lashbia lo osav lo yorshel. He, the husband, cannot impose any vows on her nor her heirs. Avol yorshav imes hu ba letoivam ksubasa, his heirs. If the father dies and she comes to collect from them her ksuba, so mashbien osa v'es yorsheha im mesa, they will impose an oath on her or on her children or her heirs if she dies. V'hein boyin ligvois ksubasa, and they are coming to collect her ksuba. Umikatatani yorshav mashbien osa, from the fact that the Mishnah there says that his heirs impose upon her an oath. Almo b'dolo nishba askinon. So it's a case where she has not sworn yet. V'katoni d'nishboyin yorshel v'notlin. And it says in that Mishnah that in the event that she had not sworn and died before collecting her ksuba, her heirs swear. Ushma mina odom meirishvua. So we see from there the passage of an oath from one generation to the next, or from one party to the next. So now the Gemara with its brief quote. Toshma avol yorshav mashbien osa v'es yorsheha. The man who owed ksuba to his wife. He, in the event that he dies, so his, even though he had written this declaration of a vow exemption, but that declaration doesn't apply to his heirs, and his heirs can impose an oath on the woman who's trying to collect her ksuba, v'es yorshan, and on her heirs, v'es haboyin b'shusa, and those that have power of attorney that are coming with her permission to collect on her behalf. What we see from here is that the woman herself had not collected. She would have had to swear to the Yorshim. She died before swearing. Her heirs are going to swear. So we see from here, Adam Moirish Shivua. And that's a kasha on Rav and Shmuel. Omar of Shmaya. So Rav Shmaya responds, Litzdodim Kotoni. This source is to be read in a split fashion. When the source says Mashbien Osa, that's Be'almona. That's a reference to a widow would have to swear in order to collect her ksuba. She herself would swear. The term V'yorsheha is not a reference to the Almona. That's Begrusha. That's referring to a case where the woman had been divorced. And where she had been divorced, so she is... We're dealing with a man, her husband, he's alive throughout the picture. And then she dies, but the husband remains alive. So the Grusha's heirs will swear to collect their mother's ksuba. But the original husband, he is still alive. So we don't have a function, an oath being passed down from one to another, because as we said, the woman in that case wasn't swearing to collect her ksuba to begin with. When she dies, so then her heirs are the first generation or the first appearance of a shvua. Mosif Rav Nosson Bar Oshaya. Another Tanaic source, and it says Yofe Koyach Haben Mikoyach Av. There are times in Halacha where we find that the son has greater strength than the father. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Shehaben goive, a son can collect, bein b'shvua ubein shelo b'shvua, through taking an oath and sometimes without taking an oath. V'ho'av eino gove elo b'shvua. And a father collects only with taking an oath. Hechi domi. What are the circumstances? Demes loive b'chaye malve. The borrower died in the lifetime of the lender. Vikotoni, and it says in this source, Shaben goive, bein b'shvua ubein shelo b'shvua. B'shvua, what is the case of b'shvua? Shvuas yorshim. The shvuas yorshim is the shvua that father did not leave any instructions that the debt has already been paid. Shelo b'shvua, k'Rab Shimon ben Gamliel. In order to appreciate this, we look at the Rashi at the top. Shaben goive b'shtar min ha'yisoymim, the son of the lender, holding a bill of collection, a shtar, will collect from the yisoymim, from the children of the borrower. B'shvuas yorshim, with an oath that heirs take, kishein loy edim, sheomar ho'av b'shas misoso shtarze eino parua. That need for a shvua will be when the son of the lender doesn't have witnesses that the father, at the time of his death, declared that the shtar has not yet been paid. V'shelo b'shvua, without any oath, that's kishyesh edim. That's in a case where there are witnesses, Shomara b'shas misoso, to the father, at the time of his death, declared that the debt had not yet been paid up. K'Rab Shimon ben Gamliel demas nisen. That's in accordance with the Rishon Gamliel of the Mishnah, that with Edim, that said the father declared the shtar was not paid up. V'av ilu hoya kayam, if the father himself was alive, lo hoya ne'mon elo b'shvua. If the father was collecting from the heirs of the from the children of the borrower, he would have had to swear. From the fact that in the source we just read, it said that the father would not be able to collect unless he would take a shvua. Al korchuch hefi domi. What are the circumstances then in this case? The mis loive bechaye malve. The borrower had died while the lender was still alive. And at that point, the lender himself was chayav to take an oath. The oath that we've spoken about numerous times, that ein yifrom nichsi yisoyim ela b'shvua, he would have had to take an oath to collect from orphans, v'katoni haben goive b'shvua. And in the source, it indicates that the son also would collect with an oath. So we see, contrary to Rav and Shmuel, the father would have had to swear, the lender himself, the children of the lender are going to swear, so it's they are inheriting, so to speak, a shvua from their father. That's the kasha on Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara responds, Omar Rav Yosef, Homoni Beis Shamaihi. This Tanaic source is in accordance with Beis Shammai. The Amri Beis Shammai say, not just here, they have a general principle, and their principle is, Shtar ha'oimeg ligvois kegavui domi. A bill of collection in the hands of the collector, in other words, a shtar in the hands of the malveh, it's as if it's money that's already been collected. And in that sense, it's called momon gomor. It's complete money. It's something, in halachic terms, it's considered something physical, something that one is able to easily bequeath to his heirs. That's according to Beis Shammai. That doesn't mean that that Rav and Shmuel subscribe to that. So that if you hold like Beis Shammai, so then the idea of the father, the idea of the children of the lender swearing is not a function of their inheriting a mere oath power, but they have inherited actual money, in halachic terms. It's just a procedural factor that they have to swear in order to get their collection, but it's not a function of Adam Moiri Shmuel Labonov. But that, once again, is according to Beis Shammai. Rav and Shmuel are not beholden to that particular approach. Iklo Rav Nachman Lesura. Rav Nachman visited Sura. He arrived in Sura. Ul Legabei Rav Chisda Varaba Barav Huna. These two great Amoraim went to meet him. Omru Lei. These two said to Rav Nachman, Lei Simar Nekra Laha de Rav Shmuel. Let us come. You, sir, you come together with us and uproot Rav and Shmuel. The result of that would be that even in the case of Meis Loive B'chayi Malveh, and then the Malveh dies, the children of the Malveh will be able to swear, just like their father would have had to swear, maybe not the same text of oath, but the act of swearing, they too will be able to do and collect. Omar Lahu, Rav Nachman says, Ich believe asoy kol hani parsi lemekro lo de Rav Shmuel. Elohavu de lo lo yisif Allah. Did I go out of my way so many parsangs? In other words, I traveled this long distance. Rav Nachman came from his community to Surah, a long trip. And he says that I come all this way simply to uproot Rav and Shmuel. You know what? It should only be that we don't add to the approach of Rav and Shmuel. The Gemara asks, what do you mean? What other, we'll say, similar cases are you saying that we shouldn't add and deprive collection? Kegon mai. What other examples are there of collection of money through heirs swearing where their father would have had to also swear? And you want to say that in those similar cases will enable collection. Before we go further, let's, scanning ahead in the Gemara, you notice there's a structure to it. The double underline highlights the expression "havu delo losif alah." We should only, even though we have Rav and Shmuel, that I'm not going to uproot, but nevertheless, we don't have to add to them. This note continues. Megama litzamtzem dinam shelRav Shmuel shelo morishim shvuah. This Gemara is an attempt to limit Rav and Shmuel, and they are ruling that we don't pass on a shvuah. The house marking that you see are mikrim, are cases shesavru the einam b'diyuk kmo hadin shelRav Shmuel. The cases that aren't exactly like Rav and Shmuel, Ava b'sofo shel davar heim zehim ledinam. But at the end of the day, meaning as we continue in the analysis, they will appear to be exactly like the din of Rav and Shmuel. So that if it's exactly like that, Rav Nachman isn't going to tamper with that. He's not going to change their ruling. So now let's continue in the Gemara. We had Rav Nachman's response to their suggestion on the second wide line of the Gemara, where he says, Elohavu delo lo sif alah. Show me be that we don't add to them. So the Gemara asks, Kegon mai, what does Rav Nachman have in mind? The Omar Rav Popo, Hapoigem es shtaro umes. We had this expression today in our shir. Pogem es shtaro is bill of collection, which has a certain amount of money in it. Let us say a person has a shtar enabling to collect the $1,000 that are written in the shtar. And the owner of the shtar, the lender, if you will, he says, you know, I know it says there's $1,000 that are outstanding. There are only $900 because I already received $100. That's called pogem shtaro. And now that person, call him the malva, the lender, he dies, umes, yorshin nishpoyin shvuas yorshin venotlim. So his heirs are going to take the shvua of yorshim and collect. So what do we see from here? We have a case where where the heirs are going to collect, even though the father would have had to swear, Pogei Meshtaro Umeis, at that point, Pogei Meshtaro, we say that he himself has to swear in order to collect the balance. So he was Pogei Meshtaro, but died. And then we see that not only was the father himself going to have to swear, but the children that inherited that shtar will swear. Okay, so you see this this idea of a first generation having to swear in order to collect, and his children will swear and be able to collect. And Rav Nachman feels that this case is similar to the idea. The main difference, though, I want to point out, is that here the original shvua wasn't a function of death. It wasn't like the case of Meis Loive B'chayim Malve, where it was a function of the death of the borrower that generated the shvua. Here, he himself generated the shvua. So in that sense, it's a little different than the case of Rav and Shmuel, and therefore Rav Nachman feels, just let's keep this ruling as it is, enabling the Yorshim to collect. Hahu deshochiv v'shovak arva. There was a case of a love, a borrower. He died in the lifetime of the malve, and there was an orev. An orev is a guarantor of the loan. The loan would not have been extended unless there was a guarantor. With the death of the love, we have to point out that the malve would have had to swear in order to collect from the heirs of the love. And then the malve died, and his yorshim, the malve's yorshim, came to collect from the orev, from the guarantor. Sovar Rav Popa Lememar, Rav Popa thought to say, Honami, this case also is deloy loisif alohu. It's another case where it should only be that we don't add to Rav and Shmuel, and in simple terms, Rav Papa thinks to say that we should enable the yorshim of the malve, though their father would have had to swear to collect, let's enable them also to collect the debt. Omar le Rav Huna bre Rav Yoshua le Rav Papa. So Rav Huna says to Rav Papa, do you think that this case of the malve and the orev is not exactly the same? Otu arvo lav bosor yasmi ozil? Is it not so that when this orev is going to pay up the lender's debt, is it not obvious? The borrower's debt, more accurately. This orev, this guarantor, is he not himself going to go to the yesoimim of the loive? And in that sense, it's tantamount to yesoimim collecting from yesoimim. And in that sense, it's the same as the case of Rav and Shmuel. Another case. Ahu deshochiv v'shovak acha. This is a case of a love, of a borrower dying in the lifetime of the malve, and then the malve dies, and the malve, the lender, left a brother. So he's the heir of the malve, a brother. Sova Romi Barchama, Lameimar Romi Barchama thought to say, ha nami, here's another case where it should only be that we don't add this to Rav and Shmuel's rulings and therefore enable this brother of the lender to collect from the heirs of the love, of the borrower. And why does Romi Bar Chama think to say that this is not the same? Because here you're dealing with a brother who is an heir and not an orphan, not a child. Omar Le Rava. Rava responds to Rami Bar Chama and says, Mali shelo pokadni abo, Mali shelo pokadni achi. It's the same thing. Just like the yosom, the child of the lender, would have had to swear, which, by the way, Rav and Shmuel say he cannot do, but what would the oath have been? Well, I swear that father had not instructed us telling that the debt has already been paid. So instead of father, just supply supply the word achi, my brother didn't instruct that this debt has already been paid. So in effect, it's the same exact situation debt, that is an oath being passed from oneself to one's heir. And Rav and Shmuel said that that cannot happen. Omar Rav Chama. We have here another marking on the side under the Mivneh heading. The diamond highlights Rav Chama. Simun kidei lekashir ha-gemora de lekamon lekam. We want to connect the Gemara a little later to what we see here. We also have a topic heading that we'll get to actually momentarily. So let's go back to the Gemara. Omar Rav Chama. Hashta de lo itmar hilchisa lo kirav u'shmuel. At this point in the whole sugya, we don't have a final ruling like Rav Shmuel, the Loki Rebbe Elazar, and not like Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar stood in contrast to Rav Shmuel, that said that heirs do swear under all circumstances, even if their father had been able to go only through an oath. So at this point, Hai Daino the Avad Rav Shmuel Avad, any judge that rules like Rav and Shmuel, then that's an acceptable ruling. The Avad Rebbe Elazar Avad. Or if the judge rules like Rebbe Elazar, enabling the heirs to swear and collect, so be it. That is also legitimate. The Gemara, on the side of our Gemara, we have a topic heading to know, say, Eich lifsoik beinyin yorshim shel mi shehoya chayev shvua kedei ligvos. How are we to rule regarding the heirs of someone who himself was obligated to take a shvuah in order to collect? Omar of Papa, Hai Shtara Diyasmi, a shtar inherited by heirs, by orphans, and a case of that, just like we've been discussing till now, where the borrower died in the lifetime of the lender. Lo mikra karinon lei. Well, we're not going to tear it up, but we're not going to enable the heirs of the lender to collect either. Agvuye lo magvinon bay. We won't enable actual collection to take place. Dilmos sviro lon k'Rav Shmuel. We might hold like Rav and Shmuel, which says that if the father would have had to swear, and that's the case when the borrower died in the lifetime of the malva would have had to swear. And now we're dealing with the malva's heirs, so they would have to swear also, but maybe we hold like Rav and Shmuel that doesn't allow that. So we can't collect this debt. Likewise, we don't tear up this document. We saw just before that, Rav Chama told us that if a Dayan rules like Rebbe Elazar, enabling the collection to take place, so be it, it's legitimate. Hahu Dayan de Ovad Karebi Elazar. There was a Dayan, a judge, that ruled like Rebbe Elazar, where the heirs of the Malva swore and collected. Havitzum Rabbonon ben Masei. There was a Talmud Chacham in that community. Omar Lei, and this Talmud Chacham said, I sino igruso mi marova. I'm going to bring a letter from Eretz Yisrael, the Leis Hilchisa Karebi Elazar, that the halacha does not follow Rebbe Elazar. In other words, you enabled these heirs to collect incorrectly. Omar Lei, Lechi Taisi. So that Dayan said to the Tzum Rabbanan, I'll worry about that when you go bring me the letter. In other words, I am not taking what you're saying, I'm not taking seriously until you bring me the letter. Whether he was being sarcastic or not, that's something else. The issue, though, is that the Dayan stood by his ruling. Also, the Kameh de Rav Chama. This came to the attention of Rav Chama, Omale, and Rav Chama said, Hai Daino de Ovad Karevi Elazar Ovad. Notice the diamond here, and you can connect this with the statement above of Rav Chama. That's what he said, accepting the reality of a Reb Elazar type ruling. The Mishnah had said on Daf Mem Hei, the Elu Nishboyin Shelo Betaina. People who will swear without a claim being made against them. So we look at the Rashi on the first wide line under the Gemara text. Shelo betayna mashma shein adam tovo klum. Sounds like someone swearing without anyone laying a claim against them. Gemara Porach, the Gemara will ask, Otu b'shuftani asking, we're talking about fools. So our Gemara. Otu b'shuftan. Shuftan means expression meaning a fool or an idiot. Otu b'shuftani askin. Are we dealing with people that are fools that will swear even though no one is laying a claim against them? So the Gemara answers, Hochi ko'omar. In order to understand our Mishnah, you have to understand it thusly. V'elu mishboyin shelo b'tainas bori. There are those that are going to swear even though no clear claim is made. Elo betainus shema. They'll swear even though the taina, the claim, is one of doubt, where there's the sound of doubt expressed in the claim. And who does that include? Hashutfin varisin, partners or sharecroppers, where one will impose an oath and say, maybe you took more than the portion that you deserve. In other words, you took part of my holdings in this partnership. Tana, ben bayis she'omru. The reference to ben bayis, which is Rashi explains, one of the brothers that take care of their father's estate. In other words, he is the one that oversees the running of the estate after their father died. So, ben bayis she'omru, the term ben bayis that we have spoken about as one who would have to swear is lo shen nichnas v'yotze b'raglav. We're not talking about someone that's literally going in and out of the house. Elo machnas lo poyalim u'moitzi lo poyalim. He hires workers, and that means he brings them in and he accompanies them out. Machnas lo peros u'moitzi lo peros. He also oversees the movement of food items. This ben bayis, of course, is the one we saw referred to toward the end of the Mishnah. So we're describing him as the one who oversees all money matters and financial aspects of the running of an estate. The Gemara asks, Umay Shnohani, what's different about these that will impose an oath upon them even with a claim of involving doubt? Maybe you withheld money or items that are beyond the share that you have coming to you. So the Gemara says, Mishum demoru bo hetera. These are the people, the shutfin, the arisin, the people that were enumerated in the Mishnah are people that occupy a role that are, let's say, they're exerting efforts in the running of things, and as a result of that, they rationalize taking a little extra for themselves. And therefore, we impose upon them a shvuah to distance themselves from that kind of attitude. Omar of Yosef bar Minyumi, Omar of Nachman, Vehu Shiyesh Taina Binayu. When the claim of Shema, this Shema type claim, this claim of doubt, is made, nevertheless, there should be a taina, we didn't read the whole phrase, v'ushiyesh taina b'nayu shtei kesef. There should be a claim of a minimum amount, shtei kesef. The Gemara asks, keman k'shmuel, is Rav Nachman ruling like Shmuel, that spoke at the beginning of the perek, when we spoke about what is a Torah level shvuah? So we saw machlokas Rav and Shmuel. What is the minimum amount of original claim? So from Rav Nachman's ruling, even though we're not dealing with a Torah level shvuah, but it has to be similar to a Torah level shvuah in the sense that the original claim is 2 kesef. That amount is in accordance with Shmuel. Ah, v'hotoni Rabbi Chiya l'siyei l'Rav. But is it not so that Rabbi Chiya brought a Taneg source to support Rav? And according to Rav, the minimum taina, the minimum original claim, is 2 kesef and a pruta. So what's Rav Nachman saying over here? So the Gemara says, Emo kfiras taina karav. The reference Rav Nachman makes here to the 2 kesef is in accordance with Rav, because Rav says the original claim must be 2 kesef and a pruta, and the denial on the part of the one being claimed from, he has to say, oh no, I don't owe you 2 kesef and a pruta, I owe you only a pruta, but I deny owing you 2 kesef. So the 2 kesef that Rav Nachman made reference to is the amount of the denial in what we call the moedah b'miksas, the partial admission. The partial admission of a pruta, where the denial is a minimum of 2 kesef. Cholku hashutfim arisin. The Mishnah said that if partners or sharecroppers have already divided their original holding, then there is no shvua that can be imposed. However, if a shvua between these people arises from some other situation, then we can megalgel a shvua, we can roll upon these people a shvua that otherwise could not be initiated. Why? Because, as we said, they already divided their estate or their business concern. The Gemara asks, and maybe before we go on in the Gemara, let's just glance at our topic heading, the Nosei, Mahu Ligalgel Bidarabonan. Can you use as your launching pad for Gilgul Shvua, an original Shvua that is rabbinic in nature? Mahu Ligalgel Bidarabonan, Mishin is Chayev Lishova Shvua Darabonan. Someone who became obligated to swear a rabbinic type oath. Can we then produce other oaths based on it? For example, our situation of shutfim that already divided their original holding. As we said, shutfim, partners, before their division of their holding, one can impose a shvua on the other. You know, hey, maybe you withheld more than what's coming to you in our partnership. But once they divide, so no more, that shvua can't be imposed. What happens when there is an outside shvua that can be imposed? Then the Mishnah says, if there's an outside shvua, because some other deal that a shvua is able to be imposed, we can then ask him to swear about their dissolved partnership as well. What happens when that outside shvua is purely rabbinic in nature? So now the Gemara, Ibai Aloho, Mahu Ligalgel Bidarabonon. Can we extend the shvua of Arisin Shecholku through a shvua that is purely rabbinic? We have a new marking scheme. You see triangles that appear in alternating directions. On the side, we have a mivneh, a makav, an attempt to keep track of the give-and-take style. With the point facing up, it represents a tshuva, a response. The inverted triangle, a rejection. So now, the Gemara. You ask the question, can we be megalgel? Can we extend a second shvua from an original shvua that's purely rabbinic? Ta shma, lova heimenu, erev shvius. Loan was taken was someone borrowed money before the end of the Shemitah year, between during the seventh year, l'motzoi shvius nasa loishutif ul'oris, and in the eighth year, the borrower became a partner with the malve, with the lender. Ein midaldalin. We cannot extend a shvua concerning the loan of erev shvius. Maybe a word of background. The halachas, the laws concerning the Shemitah year, include that upon the conclusion of the Shemitah year, loans are canceled. Here we have a situation of a loan that was extended erev shvius. That's on the sixth year, let's say, of the 7 year cycle. And then the lender and the borrower became partners after the Shemitah year. That loan that had been extended before the Shemitah year was a loan that the borrower claimed he had already paid up in full, meaning, in simple terms, he was koifer bakol. A claim like that, when someone says, I don't owe you anymore, I paid you up already, that is a type of claim that would generate an oath. However, given this specific case of Shemitah, when the Shemitah year passes, all loans are canceled anyway. So our Gemara infers from this source as follows. Taima delava heimenu erev shvius. The reason that there is no gilgul, there's no, let's say, transfer or extension of shvua concerning that loan with its total denial, is because the loan was extended erev shvius. The asya shvius, the Shemitah year comes, afkisei, and it cancels the loan entirely. Cancels the loan, and whatever claims concerning the loan are totally canceled. Now we can infer from this that if the same situation happened in the middle of the seventh year cycle, on year four, a loan was extended, and the fellow said that he doesn't he completely claims he paid up his loan, and then they become partners. An oath concerning the partnership, the shvus hashutfin that we've spoken about, can be the basis, would have been able to have been the basis of extending a shvua concerning that loan denial. Rashi points out something that's both fascinating and essential. The concept of a shvua concerning a total denial of the loan is something that historically developed in the time of the Amoraim. In the time of the Tanoim, and we're dealing now with a Tanaic source, when there is someone that totally denied having owing any money, there was no rabbinic shvua on that. That is similar to the case of partners that dissolve their partnership. There's no more shvua that can be imposed. But through our inference, we're saying that had there been the basis of another shvua, like the case of partners before division, that would have served as the basis of imposing a shvua on the case of a loan that had been totally denied. So that's the Gemara's, that's the attempted answer to the question of Mal Legalgil B'Darabonon. We say yes. Had it been other years, other than the passage of the seventh year, which cancels loans, we would have been able to Megalgil the Shvua from the Shvua Sa'oris or Shvua Sa'shutfin onto the case of the loan denial. The Gemara rejects this answer and says, Lo tema, don't make the inference that you did. Lo tema ha shar shnei shvua megalgalin, that had it been other years of the sabbatical cycle, we would have been able to extend the shvua from the original shvua de Rabbana to the second situation. Elo emo, rather read as follows. If you want to make an inference, read as follows. Na seloi shuto fo oris erev shvius. Instead of the case of alone extended Erev Shvius and then Motsoi Shvius passing in, rather, a partnership was established on the sixth year, or a sharecrop arrangement was established on the sixth year, and they divided. Ulamotsoi Shvius lovo heimenu, and on the eighth year, alone was extended, and then there was partial denial and partial admission concerning that loan. That's a case of modeh b'miktzas, which involves a shvuah d'oraisa. Then we can extend from the shvuah d'oraisa of modeh b'miktzas of that motzoi shvius loan to have one of them swear concerning a dissolved partnership, an example of a situation that in and of itself you would not have been able to impose an oath. The Gemara asks, is that the way we're supposed to infer from the first quote here of Lova Himenu Erev Shvias, Ha Behedya Kotoni Law? That is spelled out explicitly. I don't need to use the source introduced by the triangle, upright triangle, just before as a basis of for inferring this when it's spelled out. It says, Naseloi Shutufo Oris Erev Shvius. They became partners or sharecroppers Erev Shvius, and then they divided their concern. Ula Motsoi Shvius Lova Heimenu Megalgalin. And on Motsoi Shvius alone was extended with a partial admission afterwards with a Shvua Do Raisa, and we're Megalgal from that onto the case of the dissolved partnership. So, Shma Mina, being that that particular case was spelled out, the first quote is available for the inference that we made, and we can conclude Megalgalin b'derabonon Shma Mina, that we can Megalgal from an original oath that is purely rabbinic. Omar Rav Huna. And now we continue at the top of Daf Memtes. L'chol megalgalin chutz misochir she'en megalgalin. And we take a look at Rashi at the top. L'chol megalgalin al yedei kol shvua derabonan megalgalin. Through any rabbinic, original rabbinic oath, we can extend an oath to another situation. Chutz me al yedei shvua sochir she'en megalgalin lov. Al yedei shvua acheres. A shvua sochir, the case of an employee that comes to collect his wages, that shvua cannot be the basis of a gilgul. Lefi shehi atzmeinu min adin elo lahofes daita shebala bayis. It itself is there for only psychological reasons, to put at ease the mind of the employer when he has to pay out. He doesn't want to have the feeling he's paying out to a worker who's laying a claim, just paying out for nothing, when he thinks that he may have already paid the wages. So we impose the shvua sochir. So it cannot serve, since it itself is a very weak type oath from its outset, it cannot be the basis of gilgal, of extending from it oaths concerning other topics. Rav Chisda Omar Lakol Ein Mekilin. This statement of Rav Chisda is almost the same as Rav Huna. He says, in all cases, we're not going to be lenient, but rather we will enable Gilgal Shvua, just like Rav Huna said, Chutz Misochir the Mekilin, with the exception of the Shvua Sochir, the employee oath to collect his wages, there we're Mekil. We do not extend shvuas from that. And what's my binayu? What's the difference between Rav Huna and Rav Chisda? Iko binayu liftoyachloi. Rashi liftoyachlo im lo toan hatoveya shiyegalglu alav. If the toveya, the one collecting, doesn't lay a claim, hey, I want a second oath to be extended, to be imposed as well. Yiftechu lo, Beis Din Gilgul Laman Domer Megal. According to Rav Huna, Beis Din will suggest it to him. Hey, you know, now that you're imposing this oath, maybe you want to have him take an oath on a second matter. Ulaman Domer Ein Mekilin. According to Rav Chista, Im Toan Gilgul. If the one who is trying to collect and imposes the oath, he requests an extension, another oath to be taken, then we'll do so. If he doesn't make that request, ein lonu liftoch lo, then we will not initiate that suggestion. We saw in the Mishnah that the passage of the Shemitah year, not only does it cancel loans, but it cancels oaths concerning loans. Mino hani, meaning from where do we know that? Amar Rav, Gidol Amar Rav, the Amar Kro, the Pasuk says, Vizeh Dvar HaShemitah. And the word Dvar is taken to mean Vafilu Dibur Mishametes, even speech, as is the case in oaths concerning loans that the Shemitah year has passed, the oaths concerning those loans are also canceled. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.